Coast AM. To talk with George Norrie from east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, call 1-800-618-8255. And the wildcard line is open at area code 541-665-0521. First-time callers may reach George at area code 541-665-0520. International callers may access Coast to Coast AM at 1-800-893-0903. That's 1-800-893-0903. And now, filling in for Art Bell, here's George Norrie.
Michael Cremo, my guest, The Hidden History of the Human Race. That's just one of the books he has written. They are all fantastic. Forbidden Archaeology, Forbidden Archaeology's Impact. When we come right back, we're going to find out from Michael exactly where can you get these books, because if you are interested in the unknown, you are going to love this. And we'll be back with your phone calls as well on Coast to Coast AM. Chris Justice invented something, and he did a marvelous job. He's the chief engineer, by the way, of the Sea Crane Company. I bet you didn't know that, did you? Well, this is one of the most important advancements in AM radio ever, ever, ever. It's called the AM radio antenna. It's called the Justice antenna. $99.95. The Justice AM antenna is the most powerful and versatile AM radio antenna made. You know, some of you say, hey, I've got my CC radio. I've got a nice radio at home. I want to give it a little more boost. What do I do? This is it. The Justice AM antenna will do that. The first antenna to give any radio, including your home stereo, the best reception ever. Some of the features: it doubles as daytime reception and dramatically reduces nighttime fade out and reduces signal distortion and static, which really is a pain in the neck after a while. I recently purchased the Justice AM antenna to use with my CC Radio Plus in order to reduce some annoying static and nighttime fading of my favorite AM radio station. The Justice antenna saved the day, or in this case, the night. This product is fabulous, and that's from Tony in Montclair, Pennsylvania, and also from Jerry in Seabrook, Texas. I've installed the Justice AM antenna on my CC radio, and its performance is unbelievable. It is certainly nice to buy something that outperforms and is much better than advertised. Why don't you give the Sea Crane Company a call? The phones will open up at 6:30 a.m. Pacific Time at 1-800-522-8863. That number again for more information about the Justice AM antenna or a free Sea Crane catalog. 1-800-522-8863 or go to the web at ccradio.com.
Do you want to melt away excess body fat and trim those unwanted inches without strict dieting or even strenuous exercise? Now it is possible with Ultimate Slim, the all-natural, scientifically designed formula to metabolize your fat into energy. Ultimate Slim helps block carbohydrates and fat absorption, reduce sugar cravings, lose water weight within minutes. You're going to feel more energetic without any nervous side effects. Within days, you're going to start losing inches and your clothes are going to be looser. Within weeks, your waist will be thinner and you'll be ready for the holidays. Ultimate Slim is perfect if you want a lean, sexy body, but you don't have time for a lot of calorie counting or long, sweaty workouts. Just ask Will, my board operator. He lost 60 pounds with Ultimate Slim. What are you waiting for? Burn fat the quick and easy way with Ultimate Slim. Order two bottles of Ultimate Slim and get two more absolutely free. That's 50% off. Plus, you're going to also receive the Healthy Eating Guide and Cookbook, a $20 value, absolutely free. So call right now. 1-800-557-4627. Not available in stores. Ultimate Slim is guaranteed to work or you get your money back. 1-800-557-4627. That's 1-800-557-4627.
Welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Michael Cremo, my guest tonight. Michael, let's go back just a little bit on how you got interested in this kind of arena in order to start writing these books. And then also let us know, where can you get the books? Are they out there now in the stores, or do you have to do it through Amazon? How do you do it?
Well, as far as getting the books, I don't know, maybe they can get them from your site or art site. And there's also my website, mcremo.com, mcremo.com, and book is available on Amazon. It is in many bookstores. The major chains carry it. If it's not on the shelf, they can certainly order it. So the books are out there. They're not hard to get at all. Now, as far as what got me started on this, I think that has to go back to my encounter with India, because, you know, until, you know, I started looking into these ancient Sanskrit writings, I would have had no real reason to question, you know, what I'd always learned in school. Because, you know, if you go to school and you study biology or anthropology or archaeology or history, you're going to get the same story in all the textbooks. You'll find that scientists say, you know, between 6 and 7 million years ago, the first human ancestors split off from the chimpanzees, and then gradually they come up to the modern human form about 100,000 years ago. And all the facts that you see in those books go along with that theory. So you tend to think, well, that must be the truth, because here are all the facts.
Right.
Here's what they say. It all matches up. The problem is people aren't getting all the facts, because there are other facts that just didn't make it into the textbooks.
That's
and
true.
I wouldn't have had any reason to start looking for those facts until, you know, I got some idea that there's another possible explanation, which I did get from those ancient Sanskrit writings. And then I thought, well, if what these writings are saying is true, there should be some evidence to back it up. And I started looking, and of course I didn't find it in the current textbooks, but I decided, okay, let me look into the whole history of archaeology, not just what you see in the textbooks today, but let me go back to the time of Darwin and work all the way up to the present and see what I find. And when I did that, I found something that was quite surprising to me, namely that over that period of time, over the past 150 years or so, archaeologists and other scientists have indeed found hundreds of things, hundreds of human artifacts, human skeletons, human footprints, showing that humans have been present for many, many millions of years. And these are things that are documented in peer-reviewed scientific publications of the past 150 years or so. But because these ideas, because this evidence, I mean, it tends to go against the Darwinian theory of evolution, it doesn't make it in the textbooks. So that's how I got started in all
okay.
of this. And I didn't think when I started it was going to take as long as it did to uncover all this information. I thought, well, maybe I'll find a few things and write a tiny little book about it. But yeah, the research went on for 8 years, and I still haven't reached the end of it. And there was enough to fill up about a 1,000-page book, you know, with hundreds of these discoveries. So that's how I got started.
All right, let's go to the calls. First-time caller, welcome to Coast to Coast. You're on the air with Michael Cremo. Hi there.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
I just had a couple of points to make. You had a guest on, listen to this guy. It's interesting. Last week, I believe it was, you had a guest on that was talking about Christ and going to India, and that humanity had been seeded on Earth from another civilization, in another planet.
Yes, Edward Martin was his name.
Yes, taking into account what this gentleman's saying, that humanity's been on Earth for millions of years, and also the stories of Atlantis combined with that, I mean, it just it boggles the mind to think that science might be completely wrong, and Earth, the only thing that's native to Earth is just the trees and animals and plants that we see on the surface and in the ocean.
Well, you know, Michael, he may be right. Science may be way off, and some of the things you write about and others could be the real story.
Well, that's absolutely true. Of course, I would say that human beings have been around, too. In one sense, you could say we're all extraterrestrials, in one sense, even the plants and the animals, because they all had to come from somewhere. And that's what I would say, ultimately, that we're all extraterrestrials. But I do believe that some of the extraterrestrials, whether they were existing in the form of human beings, plants, or animals, were here right at the beginning. And I do believe that we do have to bring God into the picture somehow. And but I think the picture may be a little more complicated than many people think. We tend to want a very simple explanation for how it all got started, either a simple creation account or a simple extraterrestrial account or a simple evolutionary account, Darwinian evolutionary account. But I think the real story involves all three of these things. I think it does involve some kind of cosmic intelligent being, God, who got the whole thing started. I think it does involve extraterrestrial contacts. I think it also does involve a kind of evolution, but evolution turned upside down. And it's something I call devolution. Not that we start with the most simple things and the more complicated things come later, but we start out with the more complicated things and the simple things are derived from that. So the real story may be a very complex tapestry, a kind of mixture of creationism and UFOs and extraterrestrials and a kind of evolution, but evolution turned upside down.
Mike, do the Sanskrits talk about extraterrestrials?
Yes, they speak about that every planet is inhabited and that people have traveled from planet to planet by vimanas or spacecraft, that there have been interbreedings between people who live on this planet and people who live on other planets or other dimensions of the universe. The Sanskrit writings do speak about these things, and not just the Sanskrit writings. You could say look at the Japanese writings. They talk about how the Japanese royal family came from the sun. They were descendants of a goddess who was associated with the sun and came down to live on this planet. And, you know, and this is something that we actually see in every culture in the world, you know, that people were in contact with beings from other planets, and they may have called them gods or angels or astronauts. But they were in contact with them. Yeah.
Let's go to Wildcard Caller. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello, George.
Yes, sir.
This is Frank. I sent you an email about the pyramids, but I have a couple of comments on Atlantis and the pyramids for your guest.
Sure thing, Frank.
And afterwards, I'd like to speak to one of your producers about sending you a copy of my book. But that's
all right.
Important
I'll
right
tell
now.
You what. After your questions, we'll put you on hold, and you can chat with them, okay?
All right. Thanks, sir. First of all, I believe that Atlantis was more a world system rather than one city. And the remains of all these things that we see under the ocean are what's left after the oceans rose after the Great Flood, which left your ark perched on Ararat. And the pyramids, as I said in my email, I believe the Great Pyramid is nothing more than the Tower of Babel, which was built as a communication device with the other races of the universe. And when we were scattered, our language was confused, and we were scattered. We didn't lose the technology. We took that with us, and that's why there's pyramids all over the world. So I just wonder what your guest thinks of that.
All right,
well,
interesting
I like
theories.
Your idea that Atlantis doesn't refer to one specific place and one specific ocean, that it refers to a worldwide pre-existing sort of civilization. That goes along more with my ideas than the idea of a single Atlantis place that people try to find either here or there or there or some other place. So I like that idea very much.
How about the pyramid as an antenna?
You know, I don't know everything. You know, I have to say I've concentrated on a certain area of research. You know, evidence for extreme human antiquity. I'm interested in all of these other questions, but I can't say that I've really studied, you know, everything that has to do with the pyramids to be able to give an answer. But I know there are many people, many researchers out there who do believe that, the pyramids have some function other than just being a big, mortuary, you know, a big tomb.
Right.
You have Christopher Dunn out there and many others who have done a lot of work in this area and who have tried to explain it from what they know about modern electrical engineering and physics. And it may have had properties like that, and that may have been its purpose. You know, it's very interesting. Early in the 20th century, I mean, we talk a lot about SETI, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, and it's interesting, around the turn of the last century, you know, between the, you know, around the years 1900 or so, there were many scientists who were proposing that we should try to communicate with extraterrestrial beings on other planets by making large geometrical shapes on this planet, by, for example, carving out a triangular shape the forests of northern Europe or Russia, and making a shape sort of like a triangle, a set of triangles that would indicate that we knew the Pythagorean theorem. Or other scientists were proposing that big canals should be dug in the sands of the Sahara Desert and filled up with oil and lit on fire so they would
see it,
show a pattern. Perhaps it's within the realm of possibility that the pyramids could have been designed with the idea that they could be visible to extraterrestrial beings or could communicate with them somehow. That's within the realm of possibility.
Well, Michael, why did these ancient civilizations get these apparent visitations and now it seems to have stopped?
Well, there appears to be... The Sanskrit writings do give a reason for that. They say that at a certain period of time, about 5,000 years ago, people stopped performing the types of sacrifices. And sacrifices, we don't just mean in a very simple sense, like some primitive people would, you know, kill an animal or something like that. But there were very elaborate rituals that people used to perform for the satisfaction of these higher dimensional beings or extraterrestrials that established some link with them. some link between the human consciousness and the consciousness of these extra-dimensional or extraterrestrial beings that would let them, that would set up a situation where they would visit. And actually, if you look at the writings of, say, the Greeks and the Romans, it seemed like they were, and the Egyptians and the Babylonians, Sumerians, Incans, Mayans, Polynesians, African tribal people, it would seem around that time that they were regularly being visited, because they regularly talk about visits of gods or goddesses or other people, other types of entities that that we might identify with extraterrestrials. And then it seems at a certain period of time, right around that time, then it stops. It stops. So
it goes away, yeah.
It goes away for some reason. The consciousness of the people on Earth became less favorable towards such visitations. Now, in the ancient Sanskrit writings, it says, however, that although we may not be getting visitations from these more favorable entities, we may be getting visitations from others who aren't so favorable. And that may explain some of these abduction accounts, which are pretty horrific, you know, if you get into some of those. So that's what I have to say about that question.
Okay, well, you know, there, the work that you put in here, it has now become your avocation, has it not? This is your life.
Well, yes, it's turned out like that. I didn't expect that, but that is the way that it has turned out, that pretty much my life is involved in, of course, I have my spiritual practice. I have my meditations that I perform, and I'm very dedicated to that. But basically, I spend a lot of time on working on some new books now, and then I'm also doing more research both in America and Europe and in India. And then I'm also still doing quite a bit of speaking in various parts of the world. Over the coming year, I'll be doing tours of England, Singapore, the Ukraine, Russia, Bulgaria, and other places. So it's been keeping me pretty busy.
Very good. Well, we'll continue with your phone calls with Michael Cremo in just a moment on Coast to Coast.
WHAM's radar weather for Rochester and Western New York. Partly to mostly cloudy, mild and breezy for the overnight. The low 63 to 68. Could be a quick spotty shower on the west side. And then during the day on Wednesday, still on the warm, breezy side, clouds will limit the sun dull. There'll be a period of showers, even a thunderstorm in spots. Wednesday's high 75 to 80. Thursday, noticeably cooler and breezy with morning gray skies breaking for sunshine. Thursday's high 63 to 68. This is WHAM's Kevin Williams.
I told my mom a guy's going to be calling, and my dad used to date his mom.
Got it.
When your ethics are iffy,
Are your mom and dad married to each other?
Well, actually, my parents got divorced when I was 4.
Got it.
Your morals are mismanaged.
Did you know your dad had been dating your cousin's husband's mother?
Yes.
Got it.
And your values, a little vague.
Is your mother remarried?
Several times.
Then you need the doctor.
Got it.
Dr. Laura.
What kind of woman?
Weekday, 9 to 11.
Okay, good.
On Wham.
Harman Hardwood Floors presents Ask the Experts. Helpful hints from the pros at Harman.
At Harman, we get several calls daily on the best way to maintain a hardwood floor. You should never wax a hardwood floor with a polyurethane finish. Instead, use Squeaky Clean Floor Cleaner for the best results. It's also helpful to use furniture glides on all chairs and tables to protect against scratches. These simple protective measures will help keep your hardwood floor looking great for a lifetime. And the products are available right here at Harman. And remember, the beauty of wood is that it can always be refinished if needed.
For the very best selection and advice on your hardwood flooring project, visit Harman Hardwood Floors' spacious, no-nonsense, no-pressure showroom at 29 Hebbard Street at the end of Trinidad across from the Public Market downtown. Or call 546-1221 for more information.
Nobody knows more about your hardwood floors than Harman. Harman Hardwood Floors.
Call 546-1221 and speak with a Harman Hardwood Flooring expert today.
A message from County Executive Jack Doyle.
Competitive air service is one of the most important components to bring jobs into a community. That's why AirTran Airways is such a welcome addition to the Greater Rochester International Airport. With the addition of AirTran, JetBlue, and other existing air service, Monroe County travelers are getting lower fares, more convenience, and flight options. Remember, when you fly to or from the Greater Rochester International Airport, you help strengthen our local economy, and that means greater job opportunities for everyone. Now more than ever, whether for business or vacation, flying from Monroe County is a great value. Our shuttle service, our 30-minute free short-term parking, and Zoom Lane also make your flying experience more convenient. Thank you, AirTran Airways, for bringing your quality services to the Greater Rochester International Airport, where business and leisure travelers get more low-fare choices.
Coast to Coast AM, driven by Bob Johnson Chevrolet.
M&T Bank Broadway season is just the ticket for great entertainment. See five great Broadway shows by getting your season tickets now. Season ticket packages include five smash hits, the international sensation featuring the music of ABBA, Mamma Mia. A brand new tour of the legendary romantic musical West Side Story. Meredith Wilson's feel-good musical direct from a great new Broadway production, The Music Man.
76 trombones led the big parade.
The Broadway stage phenomenon, The Faux Monty, and the highly choreographed marching band spectacle, Blast. Become a season subscriber today. Order your tickets by calling 222-5000 and experience the magic of live theater. The M&T Bank Broadway season is presented by Rochester Broadway Theater League and Albert Nocciolino.
This is Mark Johnson, the new voice of the Orange Man. Join me for Syracuse Football 2002 from the opener on August 29th on through the battle with Miami here in the Dome. Catch all the action on Rochester Sports Leader, 1180 WHAM.
George Norrie from Problem east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, call 1-800-618-8255. And the wildcard line is open at area code 541-665-0521. First-time callers may reach George at area code 541-665-0520. And now, filling in for Art Bell, here's George Norrie.
I know you're going to email me about that bumper music. Will and Rondi got that one picked. That's Whiter Shade of Pale by Annie Lennox. To save you the time of emailing me, it's one of the great ones, isn't it? Michael Cremo, my guest. You can just dial up Art Bell's website and hook right in, and you can email Michael, find out a little bit more about his books and his stories, Forbidden Archaeology, Forbidden Archaeology's Impact, and the Hidden History of the Human Race, all that and much more. He is standing by with what he believes, that human beings have been around for tens of millions of years. Hey, the After Dark newsletter, it's not been around for tens of millions of years, but it's been around really since the beginning of Coast to Coast. Toll-free number for that is 1-888-727-5505. You get 14 issues for the price of 12. Go ahead and order it. You know, if you want to get it as a gift for someone, they'll take care of that as well. After Dark, 1-888-727-5505. The Priceline.com supercomputer is on right now, and the folks over at Priceline are celebrating with an absolutely huge sale on airline tickets, but it won't last for long. That's right. For the next few weeks at Priceline, you can save up to 50% or more on round-trip flights anywhere that you want to go. There are no blackout dates, and all domestic and international routes are included. People are already taking advantage of these incredibly low sale prices, and they're saving hundreds of dollars. So how low are the rates? Well, Douglas P. from New York flew cross-country to San Diego. Guess how much he paid? Round trip. Cross-country. $222 from New York to San Diego. $222. That's it. That's including all taxes. Roderick M. from Los Angeles went the other way to Miami for only $213, round trip for him. It's unbelievable. And there are others. Maria M. went from Boston to London. She paid $351. Scott F. from Chicago, he flew to Washington and back for just $152. And these are just a few of the amazing deals that Priceline customers are getting during this incredibly low fare sale. And all you have to do to join is to name your own price before October 16th, 2002. And remember, these fantastic low fares are only available at Priceline and only for limited time. So go to www.priceline.com today. It's the smart way to save on airline tickets.
If you suffer with arthritis pain, listen.
I start my day off with jointritis. I started using jointritis about 6 months ago. I have arthritis in my knees. My son used it. He told me, he said, Mom, you ought to try jointritis. He said, it stops arthritis pain. And I went to get some jointritis, and it has worked wonders for me, just like it did for him. And when my hands start hurting me when I'm crocheting, I rub it on my hands. I love the roll-on. As long as I have pain, I will certainly use it. Please, do not quit making jointritis. It has been a lifesaver for me. It stops arthritis pain.
Jointritis, with a medicine doctors trust to help stop arthritis pain. Plus triple skin conditioners, lanolin, glucosamine, and chondroitin. Use as directed when your minor arthritis pain flares up. Your results may vary. Jointritis stops your pain.
I love jointritis. It stops the pain.
Welcome back. Michael, because you believe in what you know, does it ever startle you, or do you ever wake up at night and pinch yourself and go, I can't believe that it's possible that mankind might have been around tens of millions of years ago? It's amazing. Does that ever happen to you?
Well, actually, it does. You know, I'm constantly amazed by how much evidence there is for this. and it wasn't something, it wasn't anything that I would have expected, given what I'd been taught in school and given what you see on the NOVA television programs, the National Geographic specials. It's just, I think what's really amazing is I'm not so much amazed about what I think. To me, it's amazing that the so-called most intelligent people in the world, you know, the so-called scientists and experts actually believe this. To me, that's what's amazing. When I see how deeply they believe that we've only been around for 100,000 years and that we came from apes. That's what I find to be amazing. That is astonishing to me. I mean, that really, I walk down the street sometimes and it hits me. These people actually believe this.
We're all entitled to our opinions, Michael.
Yeah.
Let's go to east of the Rockies. Let's pick you up on coast to coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Will from Madison, Wisconsin. Hi,
well, hello,
how are
Will.
You, Michael and George?
We're doing well, Will.
Good. Say, before I ask my question of Michael, I hope, George, you can remember where you read or heard your news release of a week ago, Friday, Saturday, September 2021, where you said that some European researchers predict that certain varieties, types of human beings, will become extinct in the next 200 years. For example, the last light pigmented blondes will become extinct in Scandinavia in 200 years. Where did you get that?
You will find that on CNN.com under science.
Oh.
And also check MSNBC.com under science and technology.
The reason why I asked that is because an Egyptologist professor from California called me, spoke about an hour yesterday, and he said that on our evening television news, that was also reported.
Yes.
So,
it's starting to filter.
To get to my question here, I'd like to mention that both Zachariah Sitchin and the world's greatest sumerologist, which this California professor says lives at the University of Helsinki, they write and say that Sumerian Chaldean tongues were and are related to Hungarian, Estonian, and Finnish. They're Finnic tongues. Now, to my question for Michael Cremo, and it concerns Atlantis, ancient Egypt, Greece. As you probably know, Plato quoted Solon, who was a priest, he quoted a priest in ancient Egypt, saying that you Greeks are a young civilization. Before you, in the Near East, was a great civilization, most fair. They saved Europe from invasion, attacking by Atlanteans. They were attacking out of the southwest. Now, the base root of Atlantis is from a Finnic word, Etelalantan, southwesterners. In other words, they came out of the southwest beyond the gates of Gibraltar. Lastly, to get to my question now, since the word Sanskrit, root, is also from Finnic, sana kiryat, sentence writing, should we current human beings try to save many of the world's languages, tongues, that are fast becoming extinct, including those in Russia, so we can better know our ancient hidden origins? What do you say, Michael?
On saving languages, of course. I think that's a really great
observation.
And because some of these, you know, I don't know if I agree with you about Sanskrit coming from Finnic, because I think they're two different language groups. But I know one thing: you go to India, a lot of these old manuscripts, people aren't sometimes they're just thrown away. Or people burn them or something. So I think a lot of these ancient manuscripts need to be saved. Some of them were deliberately destroyed, like the great library in Alexandria that contained so many ancient texts, and they were destroyed. So I think it is important that whatever records that we have of these languages get preserved, and also that the knowledge is made available.
I mean, for a long time, the Dead Sea Scrolls weren't made available. They were kept hidden for about 50 years, and only a small group of scientists had access to them. Now, recently, they've kind of let most of it out. But I think it is important that all of these records be preserved and cataloged and made available to researchers. Sure, absolutely.
Let's go to west of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast to Coast. You're on the air with Michael Cremo. Go ahead.
Hello, this is Brother Mal here in Honolulu.
Hello there, and speak up as loudly as you can.
Okay, I have a strange story to tell you. One night the Lord visited me, and I asked him a question about people before Adam and Eve, if they were such people.
Hmm.
And he said, yes. They were mighty and they were powerful because I gave them that power. And in the twinkling of an eye, I was inside of a large murky room, which I had the impression was the pyramid. And in that pyramid were these huge beings. I only come up to their ankles. You can imagine the shock when I looked up at these huge, huge people.
Wow, they must have been 60 feet tall.
Well, they were big. And the first one I saw was Thor. He had a bearskin coat on and a helmet with cow horns on it. I saw Mercury, a very tall, handsome man with a silver helmet with wings on it. And all the characters out of Greek mythology were standing in that room. And he said, you see these people? And I said, I can't help it, Lord. They're right in front of me. He said, they had great and awesome power because I gave it to them, the power of creation.
Was this a dream that you saw?
No. I was reading my Bible, and suddenly it was. He comes to me quite a lot here. Well, anyway, he showed me they were standing around a table that was an hourglass-shaped table, low table, coffee table-like, and it had engraved upon the top of it the planets. And one planet was lit up, and I had the feeling it was Mars. But anyway, the Lord went on, he said, they wasn't satisfied with the power that I have given them. They wanted it all. They wanted my throne. And he said, and they ganged together on me to cast me off my throne and take over everything. I said, what did you do to them? And he said humorously, I merely flipped the world upside down at midnight. And then I was outside of the earth looking down at it. And he said, I made the high places low and the low places high. And I saw mountains disappear like wax into the oceans. And I saw mountains come roaring up. I saw the Andes, that was a very low mountain, roar up to 23,000 feet. I saw the Alps come up and the Himalayas. And there was a continent between the United States and Asia. And it just bowed in the middle and sunk into the water. There were cities on it. The whole top of the United States had cities. And it was like a large tablecloth. It was ripped off from California to the New England states. It was just ripped off across out of the ocean. And then it folded like a newspaper in the middle. And cities came down upon top of cities like a big sandwich. And it went underwater. There were cities off the coast of Japan. It's close to Japan. They went underwater. I saw cities off Cuba go underwater. And then
well, let me ask you this, Michael. As strange as it may seem, many of the things that the caller brings out could have happened over time.
What I'm getting into in the book that I'm writing now, Human Devolution, which listeners shouldn't be holding their breaths for it, because even if I finish it by the end of the year, which I'm trying to do, it would still be probably by late 2003 or early 2004 that would be available to the public. But I'm getting into what I would call the cosmic hierarchy of beings. And you find this in every culture. Your caller is mentioning it, how in the Bible there's mention of, yes, there's a supreme being, but then there are different gradations of beings, some more powerful than others. And this is something, as I said, you find the different powers of angels, or you find it in practically every culture in the world, that there's this cosmic hierarchy of beings with some supreme being in the top, and then other more powerful beings down in the next level, and then human beings like us. And
It's something that's there everywhere. And I think that is part of our human history. And so I think your caller's on the right track there. He mentioned that the idea of beings that existed before Adam and Eve. And that's an idea that many Christian philosophers have. They've studied the Bible very carefully, and it's actually called the pre-Adamite philosophy that some Christian theologians and other types of researchers have gotten out of the Bible. That's an idea that's been there for several centuries now. And I would tend to agree with that as well. Caller mentioned perhaps they are larger than the human beings that we're familiar with. And, you know, I've encountered in my research quite a number of cases mentioned in various types of literatures about skeletons of large-sized humans having been found. The problem is whenever I have tried to track down any of these large-sized human skeletons, I haven't been able to find them. The closest I came was I went to New Zealand a couple of years ago, and I had been invited there by a businessman, a prominent businessman there, who was interested in my work, and he had arranged some lectures for me there. But when I arrived in Auckland, New Zealand, he met me at the airport, and he said, there's something I want to tell you. It's very interesting. A friend of mine, since childhood, he's one of the directors of the Auckland Museum of Natural History, and he's told me that they have there in the collection a skeleton of a human being over 10 feet tall from a Pacific island, and we're going to see it tomorrow. So finally I thought, well, finally I'm going to finally get to see one of these skeletons of a large size human mm-hmm. being. And we went to the museum the next morning, and the gentleman took us around from place to place in the museum, and finally we asked, well, what about the giant human skeleton? And he said, I'm sorry, we can't see it. And I had to wonder, well, what had happened in 24 hours that he had told his friend, and these two men had known each other from childhood. New Zealand's not a very big place, and they were both fairly prominent people there. And there's no reason to suspect that this man at the museum would have told his friend, the businessman, you know, some story. So I kind of wondered what had happened in 24 hours that we were going to see it, and then the very next morning we're not going to see it. And I couldn't get anything out of him, but the only thing I could suppose is that he must have mentioned that morning, he must have mentioned to some higher up person in the museum that what he was doing, inviting me, Michael Cremo, and his friend, this businessman, into the museum to see this skeleton. And I just suspect that he had been told, don't do it, don't show it to him. So the caller, I think, is on the right track there, that these pre-Adamites, or early some of the early human beings, were larger than today. And we find evidence in the Bible for that. It doesn't describe
it's in
giants.
Genesis, right?
Yeah, well, oh, yeah. And it's in the ancient Sanskrit writings, too.
You know, if they were, let's say, 20 feet tall for some reason, wouldn't it make the theory of the pyramids a little more possible? You know, right now I find it hard to imagine that they move those blocks. But if they were huge people, I mean huge people, maybe the blocks look like little bricks do to us or something like that.
That's a possibility. And, of course, they may have had other types of technologies as well based on these more subtle energies. For example, in the Quran, it said, there's a passage there, it says that King Solomon used genies to build big architectural monuments.
Genies or little genies?
Because that's really the question.
In those old movies, I've seen huge genies and I've seen little ones that come out of a bottle.
But I think whatever they are, it's some sort of mystic power that goes beyond the types of technologies that we're familiar with. In other words, most of the explanations I've seen of how to build the pyramids involve rollers and ramps and the type
types of things that we would do. But these people in these ancient times, they may have had access to different types of energies that would allow them to move and work stone in ways that we can't even imagine today. But your suggestion also might be a valid one. You know, if they were bigger, they may have been able to. But, you know, we do have mummies, you know, from those times, and they seem to be been of the.
About the same size
about
as us.
About the same size. That's one point.
Did you ever find an Aladdin's lamp in any of your research?
Well, maybe an empty one. There was a very interesting report of a, you know, Scientific American from the year 1852 that told of a beautiful metallic vase, which is what an Aladdin's lamp is, like a little vase.
That's true. I'd love to find one, Michael.
But that was that was found in solid rock about 600 million years old, according to the report.
Michael, you did a great job for us tonight. And again, your website is
www. Oh, we're finished?
We are done, my friend. That's how fast it went by tonight. MCREMO.com. It's also linked right up with Art Bell. Michael Cremo, my guest. And once again, Michael, thank you. And look, when you get that other book finished, let's get you back on, okay?
Great.
I'd love to have you back. Now, I want to thank, of course, Will Hilliard, Rondi Bussinger, Lisa Lyon, Delani Conrad, Howard Morton, and Keith Rowland, the webmaster. Keith always does just a superb job for us. He is one of the best. With, you know, when we need something done very quickly, we just call him up, and he gets it done. Alan Corbeth and, of course, Art Bell, who's scheduled back tomorrow. I guess they got the phone lines all fixed up there in Pahrump, so he should be back. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there, broadcasting from a very secret, mystical place that you just don't know where. Bye.